Hello? You play to win the game.
And good evening, Jet Nation Radio. I am Glenn Naughton. I will be flying solo tonight. Joe Blewett is not with us at the risk of violating any possible HIPAA medical privacy laws. I will let you know that following last weekend's 9/6 News Fest, Joe admitted himself to a mental hospital. I can't say I blame him. We send him our best wishes. Joe, hopefully you're back next week out of that straitjacket where he's actually been throwing the ball better than Ryan Fitzpatrick. So best wishes to Joe. Best wishes to any Jets fan who endured that debacle of a football game this Sunday. The Jets did some things right, but those things were few and far between, and they weren't enough to overcome the mighty Case Keenum and the Los Angeles Rams, as they lost 9-6. Bryce Petty's first pro start, he wasn't a complete disaster, which I guess for a rookie out of Baylor, who some people viewed as a multi-year project, going against one of the better defensive fronts in the league, there had to be those, you know, that segment of the Jet fan population that expected a complete meltdown from Petty. Some good things. He showed some good poise in the pocket. Unfortunately, and this was Petty speaking after the game, he said himself when he was asked, you know, what he could have done better, weaknesses, strengths, things of that nature. And one of the first things I heard him say that jumped out at me, because it was a big factor in the offense being as stagnant as it was, said he got rid of the ball and and checked down a little too early, and he said he did it fairly often, which was, you know, evident in the fact that Bilal Powell was pretty active in the passing game, had a few catches, and we didn't see a lot of shots down the field. So a lot of fans who watched that game but didn't watch the post-game presser, or fans who took a look at the box score the following morning, or fans who turn the game on and kind of watch it, but not really. They're kind of into it, but it's, you know, sort of background noise. Very critical of Chan Gailey, his play calling. Why didn't we take more shots deep down the field? But again, Petty said himself, not a lot of shots down the field because he was getting rid of the ball, giving up on plays too early. Can't really fault the guy. Again, young quarterback, first pro start, against a very good front, and I'm sure that the Jets spent a good portion of the week stressing the importance of protecting the football, and that's what Petty wanted to do, and he did a fairly decent job of it up until the end, of course, when he threw an interception on the Jets' final possession. We did see him connect on a deep ball to Robbie Anderson, 52-yarder down the left sideline from his own end zone. Very, very impressive throw. Later in the game, we saw Robbie Anderson again down the right sideline, and had his man beat by a sizable margin for what would have been an easy touchdown. Petty wasn't even close on the throw. There were those who said Anderson gave up on the route too early. Whether or not that was the case, Petty took the blame for that, said he has to do a better job of making that a catchable ball for Robbie Anderson. So many of us were hoping to see him air it out. A lot of people were hoping to see the deep ball, hoping to see that dimension to the offense that's been missing all year, minus the 1 week in Buffalo. The deep ball has been a non-factor, despite the fact that we've seen receivers open down the field on a fairly regular basis. With Ryan Fitzpatrick at quarterback, they've had to either cut the routes short, Fitzpatrick failing to hit his guys in stride when they've got some space between them and the defenders. And that's been frustrating to watch. So I know a lot of folks were hoping that would be the case. A lot of folks were hoping Devin Smith would be active. That was not the case. Activated from the PUP a few days before the game, but not active on game day. But still plenty of weapons, still plenty of options for Bryce Petty. Hopefully, you know, it's It's going to be a learning process. It's going to be, as with any young quarterback, there are going to be hiccups. There are going to be mistakes. Hopefully this is something where he's able to sit down with Kevin Petullo and Chan Gailey, go through the film, see what he did right, what he did wrong. There are definitely some things the Jets can do better. I mean, let's face it, when you come away with, you know, from a game with one touchdown, clearly there are a lot of things you can do better. excuse me. One area where you have to give the Jets a lot of credit was in the run game. We saw Carpenter and Winters, Brian Winters, James Carpenter, doing a nice job up front, again, against a very good Rams D-line. We saw Matt Forte with another strong outing, you know. Let's face it, Matt Forte had a couple good games early on. Then he slumped for a couple weeks, and fans really got on him. You know, he's washed up. He's lost a step. He's got nothing left. You know, he's a one-dimensional player, and the Jets aren't even using him in that fashion. He's not catching the ball out of the backfield. But the last few weeks, folks kind of having to eat their words a little bit. He's rushed for, he was just under 100 yards against the Rams. He had 98. He had 92 against the Dolphins, 82 the week before that against the Browns, 100 the week before that in Baltimore or against Baltimore. So his last four games, some good blocking up front in the run game anyway. We've seen him go for 100, 82, 92, and 98. So time to kind of maybe realize that Matt Forte has a little bit more left in the tank than people had feared when he hit a little bit of a lull at the midway point. Or sorry, not the midway point, but after a couple of strong games early on. Bilal Powell still being underutilized. Four rushes for 37 yards. Bilal Powell, folks. Bilal Powell is averaging 6.8 yards a carry this year. That's just ridiculous. Now, we obviously know that, you know, it's not going to be the case if he's getting himself, you know, 15 carries a game. But he's proven himself to be a very capable back. I think a lot of fans would like to see him get more work. I've seen it said a million times. This is a guy who's only had over 100 carries twice in his career, in 2012 and 2013, both times averaged 4 yards a carry. So he's a guy that, you know, he doesn't get a lot of the, he's not a household name, but he's a good player, very good player, does a lot of things well, and I think most Jet fans would agree that he needs to be a bigger part of the offense than what he's been, even with Matt Forte playing better. Darrell Revis, folks. Darrell Revis. Here's a guy, I mean, this has been discussed ad nauseum, but until it stops happening, people are going to keep talking about it. He's become a safety net for the offense. When the offense is backed up and they're sweating out a third and long situation, the days of looking for Darrell Revis to avoid him, those days are long gone, and now when they need a big play, they try to find Darrell Revis to throw at him, and it's been ugly. The Jets are giving him help over the top. That has helped to a degree. We haven't seen the big explosive plays that we saw early in the year. Darrell Revis acknowledged himself after the game. He said point blank, "I'm getting old." Now, of course, I'm sure that when it was time for him to negotiate his contract to return to Florham Park, I'm going to go out on a limb and say he didn't bring up his age in those negotiations and warn the Jets that he was getting old and that his performance was going to fall off a cliff, which it has. He has become, he's an absolute liability at this point. And just as people are questioning Todd Bowles' willingness to sit Ryan Fitzpatrick for the remainder of the season, which, let's face it, that needs to happen. They're 3-7. This team isn't going anywhere. They have to absolutely be in evaluation mode. Whether they like it or not, whether the veterans like it or not, it's a fact of life. Do you keep putting Darrell Revis out there? If you're Todd Bowles, is Darrell Revis, do you want him continually just getting beat time and time again at the cornerback position for $17 million a year. That absurd contract. Well, I mean, of course it's absurd now. That's absolutely hindsight. I'm not gonna sit here and pretend that I wasn't happy when he re-signed with the Jets. We knew he wouldn't be the same player he was, but you kind of thought he had a few years left as a top five, top ten guy. And let's face it, I mean, it would be hard to believe that there are many corners out there right now who are playing worse than Darrell Revis. Teams are just picking on him routinely. I think I saw, and again, this is off the top of my head, I think I saw one ball thrown his way that was not a completion this week. Kenny Britt absolutely lit him up. And, you know, again, Case Keenum, it's a miracle, really, that this Jets team didn't give up a touchdown, this defense. It's a combination of the fact that it's the Rams. I mean, how often do you see a starting quarterback in the NFL get benched after a win? Which is exactly what happened with the Rams. Jeff Fisher announcing today that Jared Goff, the number one overall pick in this year's draft, will be his starting quarterback next week after Case Keenum threw for 165 yards against the Jets. He threw for 165 and still comes away with a win because, you know, he protected the football. He didn't turn it over. And when the other team only scores one touchdown, you don't have to do a whole lot. They didn't do a whole lot. Kicked a few field goals. That was enough to win the game. Darrell Revis again. As I said, Kenny Britt, 7 catches, 109 yards. I mean, and just time and again, it felt like every time they needed a play, they went to Revis' side, and he didn't have an answer. So a very frustrating game from that respect. In that respect, Muhammad Wilkerson and Sheldon Richardson. So we had all the talk during the week about how these guys, how there had been multiple instances of them skipping out on practices, showing up late to meetings. And I thought, and I actually listened to the pregame on my drive into MetLife, had the old coach, Mike Westhoff, on the radio. And I agreed 100%. I think I actually put it in my game preview that those two guys, very talented, I expected a big game from them. I expected a few sacks, maybe a forced fumble, some game-changing plays from two players who had been thoroughly embarrassed the week before. These guys are competitors. They make a lot of money. Of course, Mo being in the league a lot longer makes a lot more money than Sheldon at this point. But you had the feeling that they were going to come out of that tunnel fired up and want to get the fans off their back a little bit. And, you know, what better opportunity than to do it against a quarterback like Case Keenum, who isn't the most decisive quarterback in the NFL, doesn't have a ton of weapons to work with, one of the worst offenses in the league. What better opportunity for a Pro Bowler like Muhammad Wilkerson with a $17 million a year deal under the microscope for loafing? He's not going to get a better chance to prove the doubters wrong or to make a statement. And when all was said and done, it was another game that you came away trying to remember whether or not he was on the field. Very disappointing effort. I know for me personally, I went back and watched the All-22 and did see him getting pushed around quite a bit. On first play of the game, lackluster effort getting toward the ball carrier, and then shoved backwards a few yards by an O-lineman. And that's makes it even worse. You know, if you're not going to come out fired up, ready to tear somebody's head off right off the bat, right after that intro, the Army Knights, the fireworks, the fans are going crazy, the explosions, the pyrotechnics, the kickoff, you're supposed to be fired up, and Mo Wilkerson came out, and maybe he's still injured, folks. I don't know. Maybe he shouldn't even really be on the field right now. You know, if he's out there playing in a great deal of pain, trying to suck it up, God bless him. But if that's the case, he needs to not be in there. That's up to the coaches and trainers to identify. So If he is playing injured, it's a shame. But when you're a fan, whether you're in the media, all you have to go off is he's in the game. He's on the field. You assume he's healthy enough to play. So if he's healthy enough to play, and this is what we're seeing. Matter of fact, Pro Football Focus, which some people love it, some people hate it. I'm in the middle. I kind of see it as a guide. They put some things together. They look at some film. They note their observations. It's not gospel. They're not going to be right all the time. They're not going to be wrong all the time. But Mo Wilkerson made their top 10 list, or I guess you would say bottom 10 list, the 10 worst performers in the NFL last Sunday. According to PFF, Mo Wilkerson played 56 snaps. 26 of the 56 snaps that Mo Wilkerson was on the field, he had one quarterback pressure, no sacks, no quarterback hits. He had a few solo tackles, but just really a mundane, lackluster, maybe not even up to the level of pedestrian performance from a Pro Bowl player with a $17 million deal right off the heels of being outed as a malcontent, or maybe not a malcontent. I mean, why would he have any reason to be upset? If you were making $17 million a year to not show up or come in when you felt like it, you'd be the last guy in the world to be upset. He's got it pretty good. But for whatever reason, and then we learned there are reports surfaced, and this only makes the situation that much more frustrating for Jets fans, that this is something the Jets were aware of. It was an ongoing thing. They spoke with Muhammad Wilkerson before they gave him his contract extension to drive home the fact that this was, he was going to have to commit himself to this franchise, and the tardiness and the no-shows were going to have to come to an end. Wilkerson reportedly said that he got it, that he understood that he needed to commit himself to the team. But listen, if someone's looking to sign a $17 million deal, do you think they're not going to tell you whatever you want to hear? And it's a shame, too. It really is. I mean, listen, Mo Wilkes, a guy, he was a fan favorite, local guy, first-round pick, great on the field. And, excuse me, again, up until this week, or up until the last couple of weeks, we were all under the impression that he was a great guy off the field, too. That he was, that he was committed to winning. That how many times did you hear me and Joe and anyone else say that, pay this guy. He's doing everything the team's asking. He's, unquestionable work ethic, unquestionable character. And some, this is a good reminder, though, too, at the same time. I think we as fans sometimes, we think we know more than we do about these guys behind the scenes. Just because a guy's not showing up in the police blotter, just because a guy's not going on, off-the-wall tirades and post-game interviews, just because a guy's name isn't surfacing for the wrong reasons, it doesn't mean they're doing the right things. Well, of course, we're fans. We want to give them the benefit of the doubt. You want to believe that, hey, I've never heard a bad word about this guy. He must be great. I've never heard a negative thing. We never hear any bad press. Some guys are just quiet. And some teams, as the Jets did, listen, we're now hearing this is a regular thing, and we're only just now hearing about it. So the team obviously kept it quiet, kept it under wraps, no public, wasn't outed publicly, wasn't punished publicly in any way. So again, just as I said with the injuries, all we as fans have to go off of is what we're shown. And what we were shown all this time was that this was a high-character guy, local guy, but now we find out that's not the case, and he comes out against the LA Rams, and like much of the roster, comes out flat, effort was questionable, results were undeniably poor, and, this is what happens. When as bad as Ryan Fitzpatrick has been this year, and he has been bad, there's no getting around that. Joe and I have gone back and forth on that. I know he likes to bust my chops because I was a Fitz guy. I was 100% behind bringing him back. I was glad when they re-signed him. But he's been terrible. He has really been terrible. But at least you can come away from what this team is doing right now, and you can say, all right, Ryan Fitzpatrick is a disaster at $12 million a year. Darrelle Revis is a disaster at $17 million a year. Muhammad Wilkerson is a disaster at $10 million a year, which is what he's due to make this season. Which, by the way, Ryan Fitzpatrick this season is actually a $7 million cap hit. So not nearly as bad as what's being portrayed. The Jets did spread that out over 2 years. So you have Darrelle Revis and Muhammad Wilkerson. Really, at least with Ryan Fitzpatrick, the effort is there. You see this guy trying to block for his running backs. You see this guy diving head first, trying to gain every inch of ground he can. And then I have to turn around, we Jets fans have to turn around and watch Darrelle Revis trying to get himself blocked on running plays, allowing offensive players to get him away from a runner, only to then turn and give chase as if the effort was always there. He basically, at this point, when a running back gets anywhere in the vicinity, looks a lot like Antonio Cromartie used to. You know, one of the things that made Darrelle Revis great was not only his ability to cover, but his willingness to tackle, and that has gone. Then you have Muhammad Wilkerson, again, not showing up. And there are plenty. Go back and watch these games. Watch the all-22s. Again, if he's injured, it's a shame. But if he's healthy, the effort is just not there. So between those three guys, you've got, of this year's salary cap, $27 million tied up in Revis and Wilkerson, who are at the very best, putting forth questionable effort. Questionable. I'm not going to say, you know, I don't want to trash anybody, say they're not trying. You know, Darrelle, go back and watch that Miami game. Go back and watch, I think it was the second play from scrimmage, when J.H.I. is going down the right sideline, and he's headed right for Darrelle Revis, and Darrelle Revis drops to his knees and gets down on all fours to trip the guy. He wanted nothing to do with tackling him. And then watch some all-22s of Muhammad Wilkerson, and watch him getting pushed around. Watch, I mean, you talk about a motor. I mean, you know, that's the word we love to use as fans and scouts use it and analysts use it. Look at the motor on this guy. Look at the motor on this guy. Muhammad Wilkerson is motorless at this point. He's coming out of his stance, couple steps, little push, and then watch the ball carrier or watch the quarterback throw the ball. Zero pursuit, not a lot of effort. It's so bad. To the point that when I do watch it, I can't help but think he's got to be hurt. Because if he's 100% and this is the effort they're getting, then it's a travesty for $10 million. But you got $17 million on Revis, who doesn't want to tackle, $10 million on Wilkerson, who doesn't want to tackle, and you're paying Fitz $7 million. And he, as I said, he's got to be done. They got to sit him. But we keep hearing about how fans can't believe that the Jets overpaid this quarterback who's playing terribly. The Jets overpaid a lot of guys who are paying terribly right now, and some of them aren't even trying. So you tell me what's worse. A guy who's you know, slamming those checks and not giving any effort whatsoever, or giving minimal effort, trying to presenting the illusion of caring about the outcome of these games, or a guy who's underperforming but going out there and nearly getting his head knocked off every week. I would venture to say, you know, give me the guy who's putting forth an effort. Even though, and we all know this, he too, much like Darrelle Revis, he's at the end of his career. He'll be gone after this season. I think the very best thing he could possibly hope for would be an invite to camp with the Jets to compete for a backup spot for vet minimum, if that. If the Jets just don't cut ties completely, which that wouldn't surprise me either. But while we're on the topic of some of these guys and what's going down right now, an interesting story today out of Jets camp or out of Florham Park Pepper Johnson. What's going on with this? I don't know if everybody heard about this, but it's surprising for one big reason to me anyway. Here you have Pepper Johnson, one of the more respected defensive line coaches in the league. We know about the great success he had in Buffalo. Did a nice job here last year with the Jets. Played under Bill Parcells. You know, came up, played for a guy who was as tough as could be on his players. And Pepper Johnson comes in today to meet with the media, which coordinators will do a couple times a year. And the reports were a little sketchy. In fairness, the reports did say that the session was confusing, because when you read the exchanges were confusing. Pepper Johnson comes in to talk to the media and says right off the bat, "I'm not talking about Pepper Johnson today." And again, this is Rich Cimini that I read earlier. Kimberly Martin, several beat writers reported it. You can find it. Check it. Google it. Pepper Johnson. Look at your Twitter feed if you're following all the beat writers. But he basically came in and said, "I'm not talking about Pepper Johnson." So somebody said, "You know, but are you going to talk about your guys, your players?" And he said, "No, the other way around, the opposite." So first he said he wasn't going to talk about himself. Then he said he wasn't going to talk about his players. So, a very brief session in which he addressed absolutely nothing for a team, for a unit. I mean, let's face it, I don't think there's a more disappointing unit collectively than this defensive line when you consider all the money and when you consider all the first-round picks that are tied up in this defensive line. I'm not sure how you get away with that, especially, you know, I don't expect head coaches or GMs or owners to dictate to the staffs, you know, how to conduct themselves with the media or what to say to the media. But I guess there's that part of you as a fan, and I guess it's a little bit naive. You kind of hope that the guys in that building understand that the fans who are paying good money to go to these games are greatly disappointed in this 3-7 start. And, it's fantasy land stuff, I guess, you know, whether or not you're going to get some answers. I guess it's a respect thing to me. Have enough respect for the fans to come out and offer some explanations and call some guys out. This is what I mean. This was the most surprising thing to me, was to hear Pepper Johnson come out and not grill any of his guys, not hold anyone's feet to the fire. Pepper Johnson walked in the room and basically said, everybody gets a pass, whether it's for their poor play, whether it's for skipping meetings, whether it's for skipping practices. I'm not calling anybody out. I'm not holding anyone accountable. You know, ultimately, of course, that's up to Todd Bowles. But there's nothing saying Pepper Johnson can't come out and light some people up and try to get to that point where a player's pride it comes into play and motivates them, you know. There's the legendary presser with Bill Parcells referring to Terry Glenn as she. You know, she's coming along well, because he felt like he was coming along too slowly from an injury. Questioned his manhood. This is a guy that everyone knew Parcells didn't want to draft. Years later, when he went to the Cowboys, who was the first player he signed? Terry Glenn. So clearly over time, he earned his respect. But Bill Parcells wasn't afraid to call his guys out. And for Pepper Johnson to come out today and tell the media, "I don't want to talk to any of you guys about my players," just really surprising, more than anything. Really surprising to hear a guy come out and refuse to... I guess you kind of have the image of him as being a hard-ass, as a guy who wouldn't back down from something like that. And you would hope that any coach, coordinator, position coach, whatever, you would hope they'd be disappointed enough in their guys for a lack of commitment that they'd be willing to speak out on it. But that clearly wasn't the case, and it was pretty disappointing, very disappointing. And – I think that most Jets fans would have liked to have heard, you know, anything that he had to say. Offered nothing, and really just frustrating situation. But moving on from that, you have to give Brandon Marshall some credit for his keeping his composure this week. I mean, let's face it, here he is, veteran receiver, best receiver on the team, playing with an untested quarterback who's struggling, really, really struggling to move the football at all in Bryce Petty. And I think, I want to say, at one point, as I'm watching the game, I think it may have been mid-third quarter, early fourth, something like that, it kind of hits me, and I think to myself, is Brandon Marshall injured? Because I haven't heard his name since, you know, middle of the first, early second quarter. And this offense isn't moving the ball at all. Certainly, if he was healthy, they'd be leaning heavily on him to try to get things going. And that wasn't the case. He was healthy. He was in the game. Only saw a few targets. I think he had 3 catches for 18 yards, something along those lines. But he did come out after the game and he said, "Listen, I don't want to, I don't want to be. You know, Bryce has enough going on. I don't want to be a distraction for him." And that's really, you know, kudos to Brandon. And let's face it. If this becomes a regular thing, if this team's putting up, you know, 6, 10, 13 points a week, losing games, and Brandon Marshall not getting the ball, I don't know how long you could rely on him to continue, you know, to maintain his composure and let Bryce Petty play however Bryce Petty wants to play. Everyone's frustrated right now. And Marshall, a guy notorious for, you know, before getting here, for lashing out at his quarterbacks when things weren't going well or when things weren't going his way or when he wasn't getting the targets that he hoped to get. And now he comes to New York, had a huge year last year, struggling this year, as is the entire offense, and then gets put in a spot where he's playing with a first-time starter who can't move the ball, and he's not even looking at Brandon Marshall. And Marshall, again, kept his cool, kept his mouth shut, talked about it after the game, and really took the right approach. So I think you have to give him a lot of credit for that. I think as a whole, the offense, the heat Chan Gailey has taken, I think it's been a little bit out of line, as I said earlier. But one thing that did confuse me, has confused me, we keep hearing people talk about, and Joe and I have touched on this before, talked about how he's not using his tight, you know, Chan Gailey doesn't use tight ends. His tight ends are non-existent. He never does. He never has, which is untrue. When he was in Buffalo with Scott Chandler, he used his tight end quite a bit. Second or third option in that offense with Ryan Fitzpatrick, a quarterback. The Jets obviously haven't had very talented tight ends over the last couple seasons. They've really struggled in that area. And Gailey, for what I would just have to chalk up to a lack of trust, Chan Gailey has not incorporated those guys. But a few weeks ago, well, a little over a month ago now, the team picks up Austin Seferian Jenkins off of waivers from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, following a pair of DUI, alcohol-related incidents. And he played a little bit early on. He got nicked up. He missed some practices. But he's been back for a couple of weeks now. He played 19 snaps down in Miami. Didn't do a whole lot. Didn't do anything, really. I don't think he had a catch. But he played 19 snaps, again, with Fitz at quarterback. Then this week, and again, Bryce Petty, as often as we saw him checking down, dumping the ball off, trying to get rid of it quickly, I was really surprised that we didn't see Chan Gailey get Austin Seferian Jenkins on the field to give Bryce Petty some more options over the middle on, you know, some short stuff, whether you want to have him run a hook or a short slant, something along those lines, create some mismatches in the middle with those linebackers. Really a very surprising development. It kind of along the lines of Marshall. I found myself looking up at the scoreboard and watching the offense struggle to move the ball. Didn't see Seferian Jenkins on the field. I look over to find him on the sidelines, and there he is just stretching, squatting down, up, down, up, down, stretching his quads, stretching his calves, but not getting on the field. And I'm just thinking to myself, you have a 6'6 tight end on your roster with a quarterback who's not allowing time for routes to develop. And I understand, you know, he only came along a month ago. He doesn't have the entire offense down quite as well as you might like. But does this mean he can't go out on the field for 5 or 6 plays? Maybe in a big spot, you know, just to give your young quarterback that extra option? That didn't happen. And it was really surprising to me because Brandon Bostic, you know, who I think that, let's give him some credit. I think he's done a nice job as a blocker in recent weeks, obviously. I mean, at this point, this is all the Jets are asking their tight ends to do is block. But he's done a nice job for them, giving them an opportunity to cut ties with Kellen Davis, finally, who, again, we've spoken about him ad nauseum, and he just brings so little to the table. For a guy who is here to primarily be a blocking tight end, he was not very good at blocking. So, and we saw what happened on the rare occasions that the football was thrown his way, and it was not pretty. And, you know, it was his departure. The time for him to go was long, long overdue. So that finally happened. And again, I think that was a product of Bostic's ability to, you know, that he had shown in recent weeks that at the very least he was as good as Davis, if not better. And, of course, Mike Maccagnan also went out and signed another blocking tight end from his old stomping grounds, the Houston Texans. He snatched Eric Tomlinson, a UTEP product, took him off the Texans practice squad. He's a 6'6" tight end, comes in at 263, and again purely a blocking tight end. He had 10 snaps this week, and he looked solid. You know, as a run blocker, basically an extra tackle out there. He's not going to be much of a threat in the passing game, as we would expect Seferian Jenkins to be, but who has also not been. So, a bit of a surprise to see the new guy with only a few days under his belt to get in there. But he did what he was asked to do. He did it well. Hopefully, he's a good addition there in helping spring some big runs. And also, another addition that was made earlier in the week, and I was kind of interested to see if the Jets would. If he would get himself any playing time. And sure enough, LSU product Anthony Johnson, defensive tackle who the Jets snatched off the Patriots practice squad that first drive of the game when the Rams got inside the 5-yard line. Actually, I think they were at the 1 when they held the Rams to a field goal. And Johnson was in there. He was on the starting goal line unit and almost forced a fumble on that first play. Played with great effort, good intensity. Came across as pretty fired up, trying to get guys fired up between plays. I kept an eye on him, and I was impressed. And his limited action to come in on short notice and to get himself in the game in such a big spot, and again, nearly made a huge play. Looked like he had that forced fumble early on in that drive, early on in that series of plays. So impressed to see him find a way to get on the field. And then another guy who they poached from the Pats, cornerback Darrell Roberts, the kid out of Marshall. He's gotten himself some significant playing time, even starting over Justin Burris, who is the Jets' own draft pick. And he's played pretty well. He's not, he's not been a world beater, but we're not hearing his name quite as often as we're hearing Darrell Revis and Buster Screen, and that's a good thing at this point, because let's face it, the Jets on defense aren't making a lot of game-changing plays. So when we're hearing names, especially of guys in the secondary, it's for all the wrong reasons. So he's a guy that you know, not a lot of people were familiar with just a few weeks ago. And now he's come on to get himself a nice chunk of significant playing time. So Darryl Roberts, hats off to him. You know, that unfortunately seasons like this is what they become about. When you're sitting there at 3-7, it's about watching your draft position. It's about watching what prospects might be available. And it's about finding guys on your roster who might be able to contribute in the future at key positions. That's exactly what Darryl Roberts has been thus far. And I'm sure that they're hoping that Anthony Johnson can be the same. Because that's, you know, as I said, that's what it's about at this point. You're not going to the playoffs. You're veterans. You know what they can do. You know how much they have left in the tank, whether or not they're going to be back next year. You feel pretty secure in that. And so, as I said earlier, it's about evaluating these guys at this point. So as frustrating as it is that Thanksgiving is still a couple of weeks away and the Jets are already well on their way out of the playoff hunt, leaving us just to watch meaningless football games, really, at least in terms of the big picture in this season. But let's not forget that you got a guy like Bryce Petty who's going to get some, you know, hopefully is going to be your guy for the rest of the season. And if he's not, you hope the team goes to Christian Hackenberg. Well, not everybody does. A lot of us hope, you know, redshirt season, keep him off the field. No need to put him out there. No need to put him in harm's way. But at the same time, when the team is going as bad as they are right now, really, what's the harm in letting him get some live reps, let him see some live bullets, so he has an idea going into the off season? You know, no matter how small an idea it may be, whether it's two starts or three starts, he's got some idea what it looks like to go against an NFL defense at full speed to kind of get an idea what he's up against. Because let's face it, you know, he didn't get that in the preseason. In the preseason, you get preseason snaps, especially when you're the fourth guy. You're playing against other team's fourth guy. So you're never really getting that exposure. You're never really getting that firsthand look of what's coming at you on a week-to-week basis in the pros. Todd Bowles has said that he doesn't know if it's going to be Ryan Fitzpatrick or if he's going to stick with Bryce Petty. They're going to watch the film. I'll tell you what, I think Jets fans are going to revolt if Todd Bowles goes back to Ryan Fitzpatrick, because you talk about a spot where there is nothing to be gained in going back to Ryan Fitzpatrick. It's not as if the offense was doing anything noteworthy with Ryan Fitzpatrick at quarterback. He's been so ineffective in leading this offense. So ineffective. It's been hard to watch. And I think Todd Bowles might be the only guy on the planet who believes that Ryan Fitzpatrick should even be a consideration at this point. And hopefully he's not. You know, perhaps this is a young coach trying to let a veteran quarterback down easy and not just come right out and say, yeah, he's on the bench for the rest of the year. At least create the illusion that this is a difficult choice and that Ryan Fitzpatrick might be the better option. In which case, you know, yes, he might be if you want to win one more game. I don't know who that would be against. I looked at that schedule. You know, the weakest team left on this schedule would be San Francisco. But do you really think this team is going to fly out west and play hard? You know, the effort is already questionable. By the time they get out to San Francisco, they'll have had several weeks of meaningless football. And I think a big chunk of the roster is going to be checked out. So when I look at the schedule, I don't see another game that they could win. Does this mean they won't? No, make a play on special teams or, you know, return an interception for a touchdown. How about that? When was the last time that happened? I believe that was that would be Antonio Allen a couple of years ago against the Patriots when he intercepted Tom Brady and ran that back for a touchdown. That'd be the last time the Jets had a score on defense. You get one of those, you get a fumble recovery, something, a fluke play. Maybe you sneak out a win, maybe miraculously too. But in all reality, this team isn't going anywhere. They're not going to do a lot beyond the win or two. So sticking with a guy like Ryan Fitzpatrick, who's gone after this season, and giving him valuable reps that Bryce Petty could be getting, and even down the road a little bit further than that, Christian Hackenberg could be getting, would be just, I'm not going to say fireable offense, and, you know, that's a little bit harsh. But you do have to wonder at this point, is Todd Bowles worrying about his job? Because let's face it, I would imagine, and maybe I'm wrong, but I would imagine that in going with if Todd Bowles going with Ryan Fitzpatrick and losing out, that's a lot worse than going with Bryce Petty and losing out. Because Ryan Fitzpatrick is the veteran quarterback who was the known entity. You knew what he could do, and you fought to get him back. And you win 3 or 4 games with him as your quarterback. Or you plug in Bryce Petty, the unknown. And, you would think Woody Johnson, you would think any owner would look at that and say, look, we're losing some games, but this is a young quarterback who's making mistakes that we would expect, and we're trying to groom him and bring him along, kind of ease the blow a little bit. Maybe I'm off base, but I think that by bringing in the rookie, but the second-year young guy, I think that gives you a little more flexibility, a little more leeway than it does when it's the veteran that you handpicked, because that's, that's going to show some incompetence. And I said, even as somebody who fully supported Ryan Fitzpatrick, I said this offseason many times, and I got into, countless debates, arguments with other Jets fans about it. I thought it was a big mistake to name Ryan Fitzpatrick the starting quarterback following the team's Week 17 loss against the Bills last year to close out the season. The next day, knowing he was headed to free agency, they named him the starting quarterback. I really felt like he should have had to come back. He should have had to have earned it. It should have been an even competition, a fair competition between him and Geno Smith, despite my lack of confidence in Geno. I think you still have to give him that shot. Todd Bowles didn't. So what's worse? Going with the guy that, not only that you handpicked, the guy who you anointed your starter before he was even under contract, losing with that guy or losing with the kid? I think losing with the kid gives you a little more leeway. But I'm seeing a lot of prognosticators, a lot of insiders and media types saying that going back to Fitzpatrick is just Todd Bowles trying to, save his job. It's an act of desperation, which I guess I can see that perspective, but at the same time, it is a little bit confusing to me. Todd Bowles' team is struggling. There's no doubt about it. There's no getting around what's going on in Florham Park right now, what's going on in that stadium on Sundays. But for him to be on the hot seat, or even anywhere near the hot seat, midway through year two following a 10-win season, it's so hard to fathom. But at the same time, the team has underachieved so greatly that Woody Johnson is doing the team a disservice if the thought isn't at least crossing his mind. And if you listen to the show regularly, you've heard me and Joe talk about that too, whether or not this team, this organization, what does Todd Bowles have to do to avoid not just getting fired, but to avoid the hot seat? Because I don't know that winning 4 or 5 games with this much talent, it doesn't, when you're losing, it doesn't feel like you have a lot of talent. Let's, Rex Ryan won 4 games a few years ago. That team didn't have talent. That was a bad football team. This team has significantly more talent than that one did, and they may come away with just as many wins. So I don't know how you explain that to a fan base. I fired one guy who won four games with half the talent that this guy won four, maybe five games with when all said and done. It's not a good position to be in. You never want to be that organization with the constant turnover, the constant changes every 2 years, every 3 years, a new head coach. You know, we say it all the time, the Cleveland Browns, every 18 months, they're holding a press conference to announce their new head coach, and they wonder why they never win anything. You know, sometimes you got to stick with a guy. How long, not that this is what you want, but how long did the Steelers stick with Bill Cowher before he won a Super Bowl? Now, granted, he was highly successful. He didn't have a lot of years like Todd Bowles is having right now. He didn't have a lot of years like Rex had a couple of years ago. He was always competitive. He was always in it. But what did it take him, 15, 16, 17 years before he won a Super Bowl and walked off into the sunset? It's not an easy thing to do. You have to have a lot of respect for what is asked of these coaches and the amount of time it takes for them to become great coaches. And that's something that's hurt the Jets over the years, is that all of their hires under Woody Johnson, with the exception of Bill Parcells, they've only ever hired first-time coaches, guys who haven't had the growing pains yet. Look at all the best coaches in the NFL right now. Look at all your Super Bowl winners. And yes, most of them, if not all of them, they have elite quarterbacks, which does help, no doubt about it. It's probably the number one factor. But they also cut their teeth somewhere else. They also had previous jobs where they had the opportunity to learn from their mistakes. They ran a team for a couple years, got fired, went back to being a coordinator, had some time to rethink how their approach, you know, how they handled things. And then they got the next job, and that's where they succeeded. Bill Belichick, Pete Carroll, you know, arguably the two top coaches in the NFL. And yes, Belichick has Tom Brady, but listen, what has he done without Tom Brady? He won 11 games with Matt Castle. You know, and then this year he goes 3-1 with Jimmy Garoppolo as his starting quarterback. Jacoby Brissett started a couple of games, and he goes 3-1. Of course, you know, he's on a level all on his own. But the bottom line is all of the top coaches, or you look at the last 10, 12, 15 Super Bowl winners. The Broncos with Kubiak, he was a former head coach. Belichick, I mentioned. Pete Carroll, I mentioned. I think the only guy recently who wasn't a prior head coach that won a Super Bowl, probably Mike Tomlin. And that team won the Super Bowl the year before with Cowher. And you know what? That's not that recent anymore. But you get my drift. A lot of times, more times than not, these Super Bowl winning coaches have made their mistakes. They've taken their lumps. They've had some time to learn in between jobs to reevaluate themselves. Whereas the Jets have become somewhat of a stepping stone. You know, we're always an experiment. Let's bring in this defensive coordinator, now another defensive coordinator. Let's bring in another defensive coordinator. You know, Herman Edwards wasn't even a defensive coordinator. He hadn't reached that point in his career yet. He was a defensive backs coach with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Jets handed him the head coaching job. Al Groh was a linebacker coach, handed him the head coaching job. So we're bringing in guys that haven't even been coordinators and then ask them to run the whole show and then can't figure out why these guys, why we keep getting the same results over and over again. Whether it was Mangini, whether it's Rex, whether it's Groh, whether it's Herm, and now Todd Bowles again. And again, listen, if you're going to hire a coordinator, Todd Bowles was the guy to hire. There wasn't an analyst out there who didn't rave about that hiring. There wasn't a person on the planet who didn't say he was ready to become a head coach. If you're going to hire a coordinator, hire the guy who was just voted by his peers as the best coordinator in the league on his side of the ball. And that's what Todd Bowles was in Arizona with Bruce Arians. He'd just been, you know, or after the hiring was announced. But he earned the award for the top defensive coordinator. So if you're going to hire a coordinator, yeah, hire the best. But we're finding out, once again, the hard way, that being a great coordinator doesn't always mean you're going to be a great coach, at least not right off the bat. It's been a struggle. It's been a struggle for Bowles. It's been a, you know, it's been a rough half season. And really, going back to last year, Week 17, that was the first big crack we saw in the dam when we saw the Buffalo Bills come out in Week 17, more fired up, more energized, more prepared to play than the Jets were. We saw the lack of adjustments. Now this year, we're seeing teams continually beat the Jets with the quick screen game. We're seeing teams continually beat the Jets with one primary receiver that the Jets can't find a way to stop or defend. We're seeing quarterbacks sit back and have all the time in the world to throw the ball against a secondary that's already struggling. So it's been a rough first 10 weeks of this season, and there's really not much reason to think it's going to get any better. Todd Bowles has a decision to make. He's told the media that the team will review film. They'll talk as a coaching staff and decide who the quarterback will be next week. Again, I don't see how you get away from Bryce Petty. At this point, there's no benefit to going back to Fitzpatrick. Zero upside. Makes zero sense. I think you have to go with Bryce. Let's see what he can do. Give him 3 or 4 more weeks. The running game has been good enough to protect them. One area where they have failed, where they have come up short, I mean, in many areas. But one that I mentioned to Joe, and then we saw it again this week, despite a strong running game, we're not seeing a lot of play action. That is one area where Gailey has failed. When you have a young quarterback like this, you go back and think, and again, no one else is going to be another Tom Brady, I get it. But you look at how the Patriots handled Tom Brady early on, and it was a lot of bubble screens, a lot of quick wide receiver screens, a lot of play action passes, hold those linebackers in place, freeze the secondary, giving himself every chance to make a play and let him make plays and build his confidence and draw that defense in against the short stuff, and then that would open up the big shot down the field. Hopefully those are some of the things we see coming up in the near future with Bryce Petty at quarterback. Again, keep running the ball. Let's give some of these young receivers, you know, Sherrone Peak, Robbie Anderson, Jalen Marshall, let's see some of these guys get a shot to make some plays, open things up a little bit, and move forward. It's time for this team to move forward. It's time to start trying to find that quarterback. Again, I get it. Ryan Fitzpatrick was a Band-Aid. He was brought in to try to keep this team competitive while the young guys developed. That didn't happen. The team was not competitive. So the focus right now has to be 100% on developing these quarterbacks, Petty, Hackenberg, and whoever it may be next year. It's on Todd Bowles. He's under the microscope. The fans, the media, I would imagine Woody Johnson. This team has to find a way to get out of this funk, this decades-long search for a franchise quarterback that just seems absolutely never-ending. We have the bye week coming up, so there will not be a loss. That will mean extra time for Bryce Petty to prepare, to get ready to take on the New England Patriots at MetLife Stadium. I hope Jets fans come out in force. I don't expect it. I can't say I blame them. It's going to be ugly. It's going to be really ugly. But every seat that's filled by a Jets fan is one less seat available to a Patriots fan. You know they're going to come down from Foxborough, seeing the easy win on their schedule. I know I'm going to make every effort to get there, with the game being flexed out of prime time, if you hadn't heard. Move to a 4:25 start. I may not be able to make it. I'm going to do everything I can to get there, though. And it's week 2 of the Bryce Petty era, hopefully, again, that announcement forthcoming. But I know I'll be tuned in. I hope all of my fellow Jets fans will be too. It hasn't been an easy season for any of us. whether you expected the playoffs, whether you expected something like last year, a situation where they would be knocking on the door, at least competitive for a playoff spot. It's been nothing like that. We're heading toward a 5-11 type season. It's not going to get any easier, but there are some young players on board. Let's get Justin Burris out on the field. Let's keep Bryce Petty on the field. Let's get some of these young guys. Darren Lee only played 19 snaps last week. Let's get some of these guys on the field. This is what Todd Bowles is faced with now. You know, one of the big differences right now between Todd Bowles and Rex Ryan in his last season, Rex Ryan was trying to win games because he was trying to save his job. I mean, everybody in the world knew if he didn't win some games, string together a few victories late in the year, he was absolutely gone, and that's what happened. I don't think that's the case with Todd Bowles. As I've said, again, he may be on the hot seat, but I think he gets a little leeway in year two. It's tough to let a guy go after 2 years because, again, the instability. Robbie Anderson's already getting a ton of reps. Quincy Enunwa's already getting a ton of reps. Jalen Marshall, Sherrone Peake, they're getting worked in. Devin Smith is coming back. Let's get him out there. Let's find out if he can play. Brandon Schell, let's get him out there on some jumbo packages just to get him on the field blocking some people. Let's see if he can. This is a guy that they traded, just gave up a fourth-round pick in exchange for a fifth to grab this guy. Rookie guy that nobody expected to start from day one, you know, kid out of South Carolina, but time to get him out there. You know, no, you're not going to start him, at least not at this point. But there are some young guys on this team. Deion Simon, last year's seventh-round pick out of Northwestern State, Louisiana. He's looked good in flashes. That's the challenge for this team right now. You know, you want to prepare for a win. That's fine. You know, there's no reason you shouldn't be. You know, I'm not one that says a team should tank or fold or whatever you want to call it. Now, playing your young guys, is that tanking? I don't think so. I think tanking is putting guys out there that, you know, is a poor game plan, and trying, you know, not putting your best foot forward. Taking it easy in your preparation. Absolutely, prepare to win every game. Coach every game like you want to win it. But put some young guys out there to try to get those wins. Because there are some young guys on this roster that this team needs to evaluate moving forward. So as I said, next week, at home, MetLife, it's the Pats. Hope to see you there. It's going to be a short show tonight. Because let's face it, many of these topics have been discussed ad nauseum. The game itself was a disaster. Touched on it briefly. Who played well? You know, who that? As I said, the interior line, run game was strong. But the positives were few and far between, folks. So here's to hoping that moving forward, the Jets get some corrections made during the bye week, and we see a better product on the field, and at the very least, some young guys getting a chance to develop, getting a chance to show what they can do, give themselves an opportunity to contribute, to start possibly next season, and move forward, because that's all you can do. 3-7, things aren't going to get a lot better, and Todd Bowles and his staff absolutely have their work cut out for them. So thank you for tuning in tonight, for those of you out there listening, and we will be back again next week. Myself and Joe, Tuesday night, 8:00. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great night.